But when you start adding chemistry to a device that can leach, it may not leach before sterilization, but let's expose it to, I don't know, heat, humidity, and now you can have increased leachables. And by the way, that's just not for colorants. That's for anything. Sterilization can have an impact in the leachability of a medical device and cleaning, either taking away or adding of those. So when we've assessed the risk of a device, we have to look at it in its final form, because all those processes can impact what comes off a medical device.
In the midst of constant commotion in the healthcare industry, one unified voice rises above the rest, a beacon bent on banishing biofilm. They are sterile processing professionals who clean and sterilize their way to improved outcomes, and their patient safety victories often go unseen. This is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we give voice to that global force, fighting dirty all around the world. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Thor Rollins, Director of Toxicology, Extractables, and Leachables at Nelson Labs. Thor is a certified microbiologist and specializes in the selection and conduct of in vitro and in vivo biocompatibility tests. He actively speaks on biocompatibility-related topics through external seminars, webinars, conferences, and trade shows. Recently, he has presented on biocompatibility, toxicology, and chemistry at the MedPharmPlast Conference in Lyon, France, Nelson Laboratories London Seminar, and Medical Design and Manufacturing West Conference, and has many published articles on biocompatibility topics. He is a participating member on all AMI, that's the Association for Advancement of Medical Instrumentation, TC194 and 10993 ISO committees, and plays an active role along with the FDA and regulatory committees developing standards, discussing biocompatibility methods, and voting on changes to those standards. As one of a select group of experts in the industry, Thor's participation on the committees offers him insight on industry changes and helps prepare clients for changes in testing. And Bob, here is what is so cool about Thor. Like, we just did that whole sort of bio, giving everybody a background, and you can just see there are so many different angles and so many different paths into the weeds that I'm sure we could go down with Thor. And yet this interview is going to be so specific on medical device colorants, and we'll describe that as we kick off the interview, but it is such a refined point of emphasis, and yet Thor has all of this experience behind him, and I know for a fact that this episode is really going to be a good one and a very engaging one for our audience.
Yep, I'm super excited about this one. You know, it's something that I think everybody may think about or look at on the surface, but none of us really know anything about it. So it's really going to be fascinating to hear Thor's perspective on these colorants and how they impact or don't impact us in the department or up in surgery or wherever it may be.
Yeah, we're about to open a whole new world to our listeners. I'm very excited for that.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case card with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Thor Rollins, Director of Toxicology and Extractables and Leachables at Nelson Labs. And Thor, really excited to talk to you today. We're going to, I guess, color in the lines, as Hank liked to quote this one, you know, around medical device colorants. Everybody's seen it, but I don't know that anybody really knows the process behind it. And we have a nice conversation kind of detailed for today. And I know your work at Nelson Labs is really important, and I wanted to thank you for coming on to the show and sharing your knowledge with us.
No problem. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
So just to make sure that everybody who's listening knows what we're talking about, let's talk about what, or define what is a medical device colorant and maybe some practical or regular applications that everybody can relate to in their day-to-day jobs as a frontline sterile processing technician.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the reason that's a great question is because there's some misunderstanding with what is a medical device colorant. There is a 21 CFR list of colorants. But when you look at those, the colorant is really defined to a certain application, like contacts and sutures. So unless you're using the colorant to, you know, color contacts or sutures, there really isn't a medical device or medical grade colorant on the market. And that's where some confusion exists.
So can we talk about some practical applications of it? Like, where might a sterile processing technician see colorants in use today when they're on the job?
Yeah, there's two main reasons why we see colorants on a medical device. And the first one's actually the best case scenario, which is they're actually used to help with safety of use of that medical device. So kind of like sizes to make sure that the surgeon doesn't use a wrong size. They'll have different colors for different sizes, and maybe they even match. So that obviously is a really good reason to have colorant. The second reason was the one that I don't particularly like very well, is the fact that some people just like it pretty. You know, they're like, hey, our company color is purple, so let's make all our devices purple. And anytime you add something to a medical device, especially when it contacts the patient, there's inherent risks. So why are we adding unnecessary components just to make them look pretty? But, you know, that's my opinion, I guess. And that's what prompted me to write a white paper on colorants.
Well, what's so interesting about that, and again, you know, you work at Nelson Labs. So what I'm hearing from that message is that for you, it's let's do what's necessary, or let's make sure it's purposeful. And so, again, we're not in the business of doing surgeries to be glamorous, right? They're life-saving. I mean, yes, there is plastic surgery, and there are some other procedures that might be a little bit more tied in with glamour. But as far as the instruments themselves, I can see why you would say that. So naturally, the next step is to say, well, what is the purpose? Why would we do this? And what are the benefits of colorants?
Yeah, I mean, we're not Kim Kardashian, or, you know, we're not trying to make it as brightly colored as possible because the person having surgery is like, oh, I want that pretty pink one over in the corner. That's not really the whole point of our industry. So by adding colorants that then could leach or come off into the body, I mean, that's just inherent risk for no real good reason, especially for that second circumstance of adding a colorant.
Now, I'm pretty sure that there's probably a number of particularly orthopedic companies that would disagree with that, because I'm pretty sure that for experienced technicians, I could just list colors and color schemes and they would immediately know what companies that I'm referring to. I mean, if I say powder blue, then I'm pretty sure everybody knows that that's Stryker, particularly power instruments, because they've colored all their power instruments with this powder blue color. And so I'm pretty sure, though, that when we talk about coloring these things, we're not using, you know, my daughter's oil-based paints that she's also coloring her pictures with. You know, what are some of those concerns and risks for the colorants regarding the patients?
Yeah, great question. And the first, so I'm not anti-colorants in the fact that I agree that marketing needs something to hold on to. But I think the problem becomes when that color becomes patient contacting. If you can color handles or anything that it doesn't really contact the patient all you want. But as soon as it goes into a part of the medical device that has contact with the patient, then that's where that risk gets involved. And you talked about your child's oil paintings, and you'll be surprised. Carbon black is a very common color that's used in medical devices, and there's some substantial risk that could be involved with certain carbon black components and carcinogens. And in fact, if you look at it, medical devices have very safe components. You know, we've been using them for decades. But when you look at the potential additives in a medical device, when you look at a colorant, actually those colorants have potential of toxicity if we have high enough amounts. And so for us as a lab, when we start looking at risks, colorants is way up there as a potential additive that has high risk. So that's why I agree. There is benefit even outside the matching or, you know, trying to make your safe device safer with the colorant. But just making it pretty by adding it to a patient contacting portion is risky, can be risky.
So you mentioned the carcinogen additive that is used, I think you said it was a black color. So there's carcinogens. What are some of the other risks to the patients that are specific to those additives?
It's a great question. So most of the time when we look at colorants, when you start looking at some of the potential risks for some of the components of a colorant, most of those that we see involve around genotoxicity or carcinogenicity. You know, there are some colorants that are really well known and used a lot, like, for example, white, titanium dioxide is something that's used quite a bit. It's very safe. It doesn't leach off very easily because it's a pretty big compound. But when you start looking at some of these other colors, the potential toxicity from some of the components at high enough amounts can start getting into some very impactful endpoints like genotoxicity or carcinogenicity.
Thor, can you talk a little bit about what might be some of the makeup? I don't know if it's chemical composition of colorants. Is it just for stainless steel, or does it really have a broader application on chrome-plated instruments? Like, walk me through that. I know you've used the term carcinogen, and obviously everybody's worried about exposure, but I'd almost even say, and it'll tee up the next question for Bob in a second, but is that also a risk to the people that are handling the instruments, not just having them used on them? But maybe just start by telling us what's maybe the chemical composition or the process. Like, what are we talking about here, and how broad is the application? Only stainless steel or other types of surfaces?
Yeah. So it really that's actually the question, because in order to become a risk to the patient, it has to leach off the material and go into the patient. So when you start looking at colors, there's a whole lot of ways that we can color different materials, you know, especially like metals. And one way is to actually coat the colorant on the surface of the metal. And that's probably one of your higher risk ways to apply a colorant, because the ability of that colorant to either chip off or some of it to break down into, you know, blood or other fluids and get into the patient's a lot higher. Once you start looking at adding the color to the material, then the ability for it to leach out becomes maybe a little bit less. So it's an embedded in plastic or mixed with the material itself. So there are different ways to apply colorants, and the risk really comes down to the amounts that could leach off into the patient defines that risk.
So speaking of risk, what are the potential concerns or risks for the surgeons or the scrub nurse or the scrub technician or even sterile processing when the instruments get down to them?
Yeah, so that is something that's actually kind of new in the whole biocompatibility safety arena for medical devices. Historically, we've never really asked that question. We never asked, what about the users or the practitioners is what we call it. But now the FDA, with some guidance documents and the new ISO 10993-1, we ask that question that when you look at a risk from a medical device, you have to think about the risk to a practitioner. Now, there are some caveats there. If the practitioner is like gloved or if they have PPE, personal protective equipment, then that risk goes down because they're not making direct contact. But if not, you still need to evaluate the potential risk. But a lot of times, obviously, you think about the risk. Something in contact with your skin is going to have a lot less risk than something that goes into the vascular system or goes into the tissue. So those are things that we ask ourselves when we look at risk from these medical devices.
That's fantastic. So I've got kind of a two-point question. Can you tell us what would be some of the really good inspection points that staff should be looking for? And also, it brings up the debate in sterile processing on whether or not the staff should wear gloves on the clean side after these instruments have been through the high-level disinfection process. So if they're not wearing gloves, can this color impact the staff that are actually assembling the trays once they make it through?
So with the first part of that question, there's a lot of points to look at because, once again, the risk is about leaching. When we do our biocompatibility test, we extract or put that device into a liquid media to try to pull chemistry off of that device. So if we see actually a color change or particulates in that extract, that's one of our first clues that there might be something wrong. And that's even with a short contacting device. So that's the first thing we would look at is color changes in liquid or leaching color, like a substantial amount of that color coming off. You can visually see a change. As far as gloves go, like for me, I would be concerned just maybe not so much about the coloring, but any kind of exposure from the cleaning process. I personally, when we see biocompatibility tests on clean devices, it's not even just the color that we see is an issue, but residual detergents and other things could be, we see failed biocompatibility tests. And so not having sufficient rinsing in a procedure or buildup in a tank after a day of rinsing, to me, also causes a risk to my employees that could be handling it with bare hands. My opinion is that I would minimize that risk as much as possible and use gloves. Definitely not latex because that causes a different problem. So I'd look at something like nitrile or something like that because I feel like that helps minimize the risk to workers too.
It's so interesting that you bring that up because most people look at the threat on the clean side as simply about whether or not there's bio burden still on the instrument. And so they would say, well, if it's properly cleaned and disinfected and then it goes through the automatic washer, et cetera, then I don't have a risk. And if I see something, we just pass it back through the window. But you're making a whole different point, which I think is an underrated topic in the industry. And I've said so on previous episodes, which is inappropriate rinsing, that the rinsing isn't adequate and maybe there's enzymatic residue that's still on the instrument. And we know that enzymatics break down proteins. That's their job. And so you're also talking about other chemicals like the disinfectant and saying, why not minimize the risk if you can? The big argument is always going to be when you put on like those nitrile gloves that you really aren't capable of handling the instruments, and definitely a concern would be the rate of speed with which you'd be able to manage those instruments. So I think the debate continues, but you make a brand new sort of argument, at least in terms of the conversations that I've had in the past around minimizing exposure to chemicals. And I think that's important. I think that's a really important comment that you made.
Yeah. So I've actually seen it. So I've seen in real life circumstances where we failed biocompatibility tests And maybe we have some inconsistent results where they do retests and they actually show some passing and failing. And when we dig into it, it's because once they use a rinsing tank throughout the day, if they're not changing it enough, then that like detergent and whatever kind of detergent they're using will build up, and the residual ends up being enough to cause irritation, cytotoxicity. And so that exposure could be there. And I always tell my clients when I talk to them, I'm going to come at you with three different hats. I'm going to come at you with a pure science hat, or with a regulatory hat, and a business hat. And I think there has to be balance in all three of those hats. But so for me, it's risk in all three. And that's how you make your decision, is you weigh all three risks and you make what you feel is best for the company as a whole.
So, Thor, I want to really camp out on something that you've brought up, because this is new for me. I haven't ever heard this before, but you're saying that the colorant itself can actually have an impact on the disinfection and the sterilization process. Can you kind of walk us through that a little bit more? Because I think that's probably the first time a lot of our listeners have heard this concept.
Well, so I think it may be the other way around, where the disinfection and the sterilization can have an impact on the colorant. But I think the outcome is the same, which is, like, most of what I'm concerned about is safety, is any chemistry that's going to be coming off a device. For example, if you start looking at some colored devices that are anodized, you know, the anodization process really is just like oil and water that makes the color differences. And so that's not really a chemistry. It's more about light diffraction. But when you start adding chemistry to a device that can leach, they may not leach before sterilization, but let's expose it to, I don't know, heat, humidity, and now you can have increased leachables. And by the way, that's just not for colorants. That's for anything. Sterilization can have an impact in the leachability of a medical device, and cleaning, either taking away or adding of those. So when we've assessed the risk of a device, we have to look at it in its final form, because all those processes can impact what comes off a medical device.
Yeah, that's great information. So what is the thought process for selecting a colorant when these companies are wanting to place it on an instrument?
That is a great question. And the reason why that's such a good question is because one of my pet peeves is when people tell me, oh, it's a medical grade colorant, or it's off that 21 CFR list for colorants, and so it's completely safe. The fact of the matter is there's no medical grade criteria out there. So what I tell everyone is, instead of just trusting a label, you need to dig deeper and understand why it's actually being marketed as medical grade or food grade or whatever it is. It's your responsibility to kind of understand the risk of that colorant. And so you need to ask them, what did you do to make this claim? What testing did you do? And compare that to the testing that you're required to understand what kind of gaps you may have, where you might see failures. We see this all the time with cytotox. Cytotoxicity is one of the most sensitive biocompatibility tests. And we'll see colorants fail cytotox because they're leaching, but the company just is calling it medical grade because it's not a sensitizer, for example. But that's not really the whole story of what you have to prove for a medical device. So really it's important to understand what was being done on that colorant to make you feel good about using it in a medical device.
I can just see the fallout from this whole podcast going out. Like, we just opened Pandora's box and shined light on something that most people didn't put a lot of thought into or weren't concerned about. And now we've got the gears kind of grinding. And so this has been a very cool interview. We're just about to wrap, but what about this question, since we're going to open Pandora's box? Are devices validated with the colorants in place, or are the colorants added after they go through that validation process, or is it inconsequential? It could be either way.
Oh, no, it's not inconsequential. It should be validated with the colorant in place, also with the worst case amount of colorant that could be there, because sometimes, depending on the size or maybe how it's used, it could be a more colorant versus another device. But I know I've seen risk assessments done within companies where they've added or changed the colorant, and they go, oh, we used a food grade colorant, or we used one of these colorants off of the FDA approved colorant list. And I'm using quotes there. And so therefore, there's no increased risk. And this is why the FDA did their webinar that I wrote the white paper off of, because they're concerned about colorants. If the colorant is in the patient contacting portion, we should be concerned about it. And so just adding or changing a colorant after the testing's been completed, it's not just a forget kind of circumstance. You really need to go through an evaluation. You really need to understand the toxicological risk of that colorant. And you have to go through the proper steps to validate adding a colorant to a medical device.
I think you just alluded to a gap in the industry when you put quotes around the FDA-approved colorant, and I really want you to talk a little bit more about that. And can you just give us a little bit more detail on that?
Yeah, so this is what I'll see. So they'll look up colorants, and the FDA does have that approved list that I talked about, the 21 CFR. So those are colorants that the FDA has approved. But what people miss is that they approve it for this, that certain application, which is all the applications on that list are either contact lenses or sutures. So unless you're making it for contact lenses or sutures, they're not really FDA approved. And when you look at that list, it's actually a very known amount that you have to stay underneath. Just looking at that and saying, oh, this colorant is approved by the FDA, and therefore I don't have to worry about it, is a false statement unless you're making contact lenses and sutures under that amount on that list.
And when you say that amount, is that a concentration? Is it a surface area? Like, how's that measured?
Yeah, so it's a concentration. So these colorants that are on the FDA's list are very well controlled. The ingredients are. And toxicity 101, dose makes the poison. So everything is toxic. It just matters of how much dose you get. And nothing's toxic depending on the dose you get. So that they basically are looking, okay, we know that this, using an ocular kind of contact or a skin contact, that this dose is safe for this particular colorant. But that's as far as the FDA will go. And they'll tell you that unless you're using it in those applications, suture or contact, then that's not an approved colorant for any other application.
Yep, we opened Pandora's box. You've been an excellent guest, Thor. Really, when we first started looking at the outline and talking about colorant, I thought, well, how long are we really going to be able to take this interview? But, I mean, this has definitely opened my eyes, and you are a fantastic interview.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun. Anytime you guys wanted to talk, just let me know.
Yeah, I can see us talking again for a variety of reasons. And, you know, even Mike does something called Beyond the Headlines, where we kind of look at something in the industry and talk about how, you know, somebody got maybe cited or they put patients at risk. And we really go out and talk about what are the ways to avoid that in your own facilities and what are some of the key areas? And I can see you being an expert coming up, because the whole concept of leachables is really a new concept to me. And I have a feeling it goes beyond colorants. Would you agree?
Oh, so this is the new thing with safety of medical devices, is the chemistry, the fingerprint of these devices, because historically, we just inject it in an animal and we stand back and go, oh, that guinea pig didn't react, so we think that this device is safe. And we're pushing the industry now going away from that and more into, let's get the chemical fingerprint of this device or this material and understand exactly how it's being used if it's a toxicological risk. So it's such a more powerful information, and it helps us. These animal tests were made back in the 50s. And so we're so antiquated on our thought process that we really need to jump into the new science that's out there.
Thor, thank you so much, not only for sharing your knowledge, but definitely your passion. And that's something that the industry just continues to need more of. So really enjoyed having you on this episode of Beyond Clean, and can't thank you enough.
Oh, it was my pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Thor Rollins, Director of Toxicology and Extractables and Leachables at Nelson Labs. And Mike, honestly, this was a very unique interview. And I think the whole concept of leachables is really just about to permeate, you know, at least my thought and perspective on looking at the safety of medical devices, and especially when you talk about the condition of that colorant on the instruments.
Yeah, I got to tell you, my mind was just blown because this was not something that I had even thought about. Now, like you said, you know, I'm thinking back to all of the instruments I've seen, particularly power instruments that have a lot of coloring, and over time that color starts to fade. And now, thanks to this interview, I'm thinking, where did it go? You know, who did it end up inside? Who is it leached into? Was it me? Was it the patient? I don't know. And so, you know, this has been a very eye-opening interview and probably going to spark a lot of discussion in the future.
Well, just think about it. A lot of times when we talk about leaving something behind in a patient, we're talking about something very physical, and even something like chrome plating, when that begins to flake and break down, you can put that over a piece of white paper, kind of rub that finish and see it fall onto the paper, and you can physically see what is being left behind. But this whole thing around the colorant, I'm not sure it just flakes off the way that you would think of something physically happening. It's more of this leaching. It's almost as if it's fluid in the way that it leaves the device. And sometimes I'm sure that that wears down during reprocessing and not during the procedure. But again, anytime you have an instrument finish that we talk about that's not intact, we talk about tape, we talk about color coding, we talk about chrome plating, all of these different coatings and finishes. And if it's physically compromised in a way that you can see it breaking down, even insulation on a bipolar, we know inherently that that's a concern. But this whole concept of leaching, way over my head until today.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the great things about this whole podcast is that, you know, every episode we're learning stuff. And today is definitely one where I have learned some stuff. And like I said, I really expect that this is going to be a podcast that, honestly, at first glance, you probably think colorant, no big deal. But after listening to this, it's going to generate some conversation.
Yep. I think a lot more downloads of that white paper are going to happen after this one, but that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike, Bob, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.